Hello and welcome to Euractiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And I'm Natasha Foote.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food team.
So a pretty interesting piece of news that we've been looking at this week that actually hasn't come from the world of agriculture, which is very interesting. It's come from the world of health. So obviously, well, in case you guys don't know, we also double as health reporters in our spare time.
I think our listeners are probably already aware of that. But yes, we're both health reporters.
In between all of our agri-food reporting. And
I'd say we are full of surprises.
I know. Just follow them.
I mean, I have to be honest, I haven't written any agri-food story so far in this week because I mostly follow this AstraZeneca route.
It's been a big week for health, so I think we'll let you off. But actually, it's paid off this week that we're health reporters because we've made this interesting connection between something that happened in health. So this week we've had a sneak peek of the EU cancer plan. This is the Europe's beating cancer plan. And this plan basically was intended to be presented in December, but it's been delayed and it's planning to be unveiled next week. And so the point of the plan is basically to combat cancer in the EU. And, you know, despite the COVID crisis stealing the spotlight over the last few months, this EU-wide plan has remained one of the key priorities of Ursula von der Leyen's commission when it comes to public health. So it's a pretty big deal. And so, yeah, it aims to kind of support and coordinate like member states' efforts in beating cancer. And it's a very comprehensive approach to tackling cancer that goes through all stages from prevention to diagnostic and treatment. So we had a look at a draft version of the cancer plan. And something that kind of stood out to us that was pretty interesting, that there was actually an interesting agri-food angle as well. More than one, actually several. And that is why maybe until now you're thinking, why is she talking about the cancer plan? Well, this is why. So within the cancer plan, obviously, like I said, it's a very comprehensive approach to tackling cancer. And as part of that, it also aims to deal with the nutritional aspects of cancer and how we can promote healthy eating and healthy nutrition in the prevention of cancer.
Sounds like the farm to fork strategy.
It is a bit like the farm to fork strategy, yeah. From farm to fork, what would the equivalent be from farm to fork?
This is tough.
Yeah,
imagine all the best heads in the commission trying to figure out a credible name, and they come up with the farm to fork strategy. So
I know, and this one is just the beating cancer plan. You know, it's just straight up.
Discovered on the plan of EFSA, the Food Safety Agency, dating back to 2014, that they already used the term from farm to fork. So it's not that original as it might seem. EFSA probably used it first. So,
and then the commission stole it. That's quite an accusation there, Gerardo.
It's inspired by.
Okay, it's a nice way of putting it. So in the cancer plan, it has this, like I said, this focus on nutrition. And as part of that, there's a section in the draft, and you know, I have to stress that it's obviously a draft. There's still time that this could change between now and when it's going to be unveiled next week, but
also because the draft is from December.
Exactly, yeah, so it may well have already changed, but it is interesting to see this focus and this agri-food link. And as part of that, there's a section talking about marketing and advertising and how this is designed to influence the choices that consumers make, and how this communications on healthy food and drinks, how they influence consumer choice. And as part of that, the cancer plan, the draft that we've seen, says that the EU promotion policy for agricultural products will be reviewed in view of phasing out the promotion of foods linked with cancer risks. And for this, they've included red and processed meat.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh.
They did it.
I know. And I'm sure our listeners will remember, you know, there was this controversy back with the presentation of the farm to fork strategy, how it tackled this issue of red and processed meat, because actually in a draft version of the farm to fork strategy, it had a pretty strong stance against stopping stimulating production and consumption of meat, and this didn't make the final cut. But nevertheless, there's still a reference in the farm to fork strategy to encouraging people to consume less red and processed meat. But yeah, it's very interesting to see this reference in the cancer plan and kind of see how these, you know, these policies are aligning between health and agri-food, and how these can, you know, be better aligned.
Do you also remember another clash, let's say, because the commission was accused, and there was this Become Beefitarian campaign that received EU funding, which is basically what we're talking about. So there are some EU promotion programs. For instance, there's one annual promotion program that intends to, again, promote European products abroad. And when I say abroad, I say to third countries. So there was this this program, this commission-funded project that aimed to promote Spanish meat products like chorizo and famous, you know, worldwide famous products. But some MEPs wrote a letter criticizing this project because that would ultimately have the effects of promoting the consumption of meat products. And again, they have this very strong slogan that was Become Beefitarian, no? The commission is not responsible for the content, but at the same time, it was under attack because, again, as you said, the Farm to Fork strategy supports a shift toward more plant-based diets. And if you see the last program for the promotion of EU agri-food products in and outside the EU, the one that actually will, again, will last until the end of the year, the commission intends to prioritize organic products, fruits, vegetables, and sustainable agriculture. This could have been, you know, perceived as a course of correction after the Beefitarian outcry. And now we have a thousand of times, it's a draft, but this could be even, not another blow, but I mean, it's quite controversial because, again, it's we're talking about the phase out of the promotion of meat products. And again, the marketing campaign are literally overwhelmed by, for instance, advertising funded by the EU on European meat products.
Yeah, and like you said, for 2021, you know, the focus is really on organic products, on increasing vegetable consumption, fruit and vegetables, but there's no mention of meat from what I can see. I actually asked the commission for some information on this.
You did your job.
I did. Yeah, I did my background research. They provided me with a list of products that are eligible for promotion, which does actually include meat, technically. They did stress this kind of focus in 2021 on organic and on fruit and veg. And actually this news that we've got this week about the cancer plan has coincided with the publication of the 2021 calls for proposals for grants for agri-promotion measures. Definitely there was an event about this actually.
What a coincidence.
This week, what a coincidence, I know. There was an event on this week where this was being discussed and kind of, you know, what this meant in real terms was being put forward. And definitely the focus was strongly on organic and sustainable production without much mention of meat. So that's quite interesting to see whether that will be included in the promotional policy or not, and how this will kind of how this will play out between the two plans and how they will be aligned.
There are also other agri-food bits in the leaked cancer plan, right?
Yes indeed, you're right indeed. Actually there's a very interesting section on tax incentives, which doesn't sound very interesting, you say it like that, but it is. Trust me, it is. Bear with me.
It sounds impactful, like, you know, power. Yeah. If you, you know, adjust stacks in order to have a particular effect, it's quite powerful. So
yeah, and in this case, the draft, I'm still saying draft, like emphasizing that, but the draft speaks about tax incentives to contribute to facilitate healthy lifestyles. Basically, it puts forward this idea that the commission will publish a study on different fiscal measures and pricing policies on sugars, soft drinks, and alcoholic beverages. And it says that following this this study, which is planned for 2022, the commission will consider the feasibility of proposing new tax measures on soft drinks and sugars. So that's also pretty interesting. It has a pretty big effect on the agri-food sector.
Yeah, combined to the phase out of the meat promotion. Yeah,
it's strong. Yeah, it's strong. Phase out of meat and red and processed meat. Tax measures on sugar, soft drinks, and alcoholic beverages.
Indeed. And also there's of course it's part of the prevention part of this cancer plan, and there's a. The part that say that this new action to tackle cancer will also involve the exposure of young people to this product, meaning basically alcoholic beverages. So reduction of online marketing, advertising of all kind of alcoholic beverages. It's quite tough. Again, it's reasonable, let's say, but more than one stakeholder wouldn't be happy.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
I said before that I haven't written any agriculture article. That's a lie. Well, half truth.
Half true. It's a half truth.
Because we published a video explainer on agricultural statistics this week. Mm-hmm. But it was filmed last week, so that's why. And there's basically me talking about statistics and figures that could help us understanding new trends in agriculture, evaluating policies like the Common Agricultural Policy, the Farm to Food Strategy. So it's quite interesting. And as a teaser of this video explainer, we also asked the Director of Strategy Simplification and Policy Analysis in the Commission DG Agri, Tasso Saniotis, and we asked him to tell us a bit more which kind of statistics are available on the Commission's website. So let's hear from him.
If you ever wondered what we do with a available wealth of statistics and indicators in DG Agri, this is as rapid as a summary as it gets. They provide the first source of information on the state of the farm economy, allow the monitoring of the environmental footprint of the farming sector, reflect the social dimension of changes in farming and rural areas, feed econometric models to produce the baseline, that is the long-term outlook for EU's agriculture, underpin policy scenarios about the impact of changes in the CAP, in trade, and in other policy areas affecting agriculture, and gradually but steadily become more user-friendly for you all to enjoy.
So we're here today with Gianluca Brunori, who is the chair of the EU Commission's Standing Committee on Agricultural Research. And also he's a professor of food policy at the University of Pisa. And he's here today to talk a little bit about an interesting report that came out recently. So Gianluca, could you just briefly kind of give an outline of what exactly the aim of the report was and give a brief summary on its main outcomes?
Maybe you know that SCAR is the Standing Committee for Agricultural Research. And it's a body within the European Commission to which member states participate and have a consultancy role for the research policies of the European Commission in the field of agriculture. And one of the activities of SCAR is the foresight reports. Actually, this is the fifth report. And in this case, the mandate that was given to a group of experts, of which I was the chair, was to identify the research pathways to achieve a safe and just operating space. Maybe you know that this concept of a safe and just operating space comes from a body of literature that considered the importance of planetary boundaries, so biophysical indicators that should not trespass if we don't want that our system becomes instable. But at the same time, this just operating space is related to the donut economy of Kate Raworth that says that we should have also a kind of social ceiling related to social indicators. So in order to achieve sustainable development, we should have both a biophysical, let's say, limit, and at the same time, the social, to safeguard social indicators. And we had as a points of reference the climate change agreements in Paris and the sustainable development goals. And in order to do this, we identify 11 indicators related to biophysical aspects and social aspects that, in our view, Europe should achieve in order to stay into this safe and just operating space. And we focused very much on what we call a transition. So how to achieve these goals in 30 years time. And in order to do this, we identified three pathways. The first pathway is related to diets and nutrition. We take the concept of a sustainable diet, that is a set of rules that the respect of which would be helpful for the body and helpful for the planet. So if people is able to respect these dietary rules, they would at the same time have a good health and at the same time, let's say, respect the resources of the planet. And in order to do this, we need behavioral change, so consumers' behavior changing, and at the same time, production rules changing, because in order to have a sustainable diet, you have to have a sustainable consumption and sustainable production. The second pathway is related to circularity. We endorsed the concept of a circular economy, and we apply a circular economy both to the primary sector, which is circular in nature, but actually with the conventional and industrial agriculture has, let's say, get a little bit far from this model. But at the same time, we want to link this this circular economy approach to the food system as a whole. So the idea is that there should be a long series of cycles in which waste is, let's say, removed from the agenda and is cancelled. The third pathway is related to diversity. We are aware that the present food system are very detrimental to diversity, especially biodiversity. And we think that in order to restore biodiversity, but also socio and economic diversity, we need to be proactive in diversifying primary systems, production system, distribution systems, and also consumption system. So the diversity becomes a keyword for the transformation of the food system. So this is the, let's say, the main achievements. But at the same time, during our work, the coronavirus occurred. And so we had to start a reflection on the validity of these objectives.
Yeah, indeed. It's again, this is there have been four such expert foresight reports since 2007. So similarly, looking at the challenges facing agriculture at the food system. But as you said, now COVID could have changed the entire framework. And how has COVID changed the focus of this report compared to the previous, for instance?
Actually, the first question we had in this regard was that our conclusions robust in the light of the coronavirus or not. And actually, we started with a reflection on the impact of COVID on the food system. And we have seen that there are a lot of impacts that are systemic in nature. So what does a systemic crisis imply? It implies that the hazard can strike on one point of the system, but the effects can be detected very far from the point where the hazard hit. So in order to have a clear understanding this kind of hazard, we need to understand the system as a whole. So we need a system approach. And so we discovered that, for example, European Union has not a food system policy. To tell the truth, the European Union has not a food policy. So something that goes from farm to fork. And actually, during our work, also the farm to fork strategy was published. And this was a welcome because actually there is a recognition that system shocks cannot be addressed with sectorial policies. And this opens a lot of windows for research, because so far research has been very much specialized. What we need now is a research that look at links between different parts of the system. So this is, in our view, the first lesson learned from the COVID. The second lesson learned is that we need then to prepare to shocks, because this is not an unexpected event, to tell the truth, because a lot of people had already warned about this shock. And also some other epidemics occurred, for example, Ebola, etc. But there are a lot of experts that think in terms of pandemics, but nevertheless, the system is not prepared. So it is important to prepare to understand how to anticipate shocks. And this in this case is a pandemic, but it could be something different, a climate shock, an earthquake, etc. And so we see that there are a lot of catastrophes in the history, in the recent history. So we need to anticipate them. We need to learn on how to cope with these shocks. So what to do when a shock comes and how to recover. So in terms of policy, it is important to build capacity to face shocks, because shocks can occur, especially in times of climate change. And what is important again is linking short-term responses to long-term goals. So one big question is, if we want to achieve our long-term goals and a shock happens, what to do? And so, for example, this issue of building back better or even building differently emerges as a very important issue.
And so when we talk about innovation, I mean, the conversation usually turns to chemical or technological innovation, but the report highlights a number of interesting biological innovations. So things like new microbiological processes for biorefineries, biodegradable packaging, and also the importance of agroecology, which ties into the kind of diversity of the food systems you were talking about before. Do you think that there is enough focus on biological innovation in the farming sector?
We think that the biological innovation is a game changer. And it can be a game changer for good, for sure, because it provides a lot of possibilities, especially in the field of microorganisms and of, for example, precision fermentations, etc., because it can address some gaps in the system. For example, the problem of alternative proteins or non-animal, let's say, food or the biorefineries, etc. And at the same time, the capacity to analyze the genome and the evolution of the living matter is something that it's really very valuable. In the light of the pandemic shocks or the systemic shocks, it is important to have a responsible approach to this biological innovation. And actually, the SCAR Foresight Report addresses the concept of responsible research and innovation as a key principle for researchers, which means that, first of all, research should be participated. So stakeholders of any kinds should be involved in the definition of the goals and of the, let's say, activities of research. The second aspect is related to anticipation. So innovation is not good because it's new, but it's good because it solves a societal problem. So in order to let's say, evaluate the validity of the research, its impact should be anticipated and reflected upon. And the third aspect of research, responsible research and innovation, is the capacity of researchers, but also of research bodies and research institutions to reflect on the, let's say, the effects that research can have on the on society, on the environment, etc., and be able to deviate in case that some of the risks are too high to be, let's say, to be run. So I think that it is important to frame biological innovation as any technological innovation within a bigger societal conversation, where also other aspects of innovation, for example, social innovation, organizational innovation, are taken into consideration at the same time.
And also, the report highlights the importance of education, communication, in a certain sense, nudging consumers to eat sustainably and healthily. And for instance, the Commission's Farm to Fork strategy seems to rely on this aspect as well. So this is, of course, easier said than done, and there's a lot of misinformation surrounding healthy eating. So what concrete suggestions does the report outline to promote and inform on healthy eating and how this links with a healthy farming system?
I think that on one side, we have a lot of scientific evidence now on what a healthy diet is. And science is progressing a lot on this regard. And for example, we have several strong scientific papers that now link nutrition to planetary resources and indicate how it is possible to change diets without harming health, actually to improve health, and at the same time keeping below the planetary boundaries. But at the same time, there are a lot of controversies. So it is clear that any nudging strategy should be based on a large consensus. And for this reason, we advocate for science policy interfaces where or science policy and society interfaces where consensus emerges out of a dialogue between the scientific world, the policy world, and the societal world in, let's say, on the model of IPCC on climate change or IPBES on biodiversity, etc. Because scientists need to listen to policymakers and to society, and at the same time, they can have more legitimization, and at the same time, policy making can be, let's say, carried out on the ground of scientific evidence. But it is the dialogue between science and policies that makes progress evident, because in that case, the new knowledge is applied to the constraints of reality. And in this case, forums on food are really largely welcome, because with forums you can create this consensus upon which you create nudging strategies.
There's a flawed view institution, you know, here in Brussels, not only in Brussels, actually, all across Europe. We have contributed from a member of one of these institutions is the Committee of Regions that basically represent the interests of the several parts, several areas of Europe. So there are representatives from, again, regions. He's Guillaume Croze. He comes from the Regional Council of Occitane, Pyrenees and Mediterranean region in France. And he presented an opinion on agroecology, which has been adopted by the Committee of Regions Commission on Natural Resources. And now it needs to be adopted at the plenary session of the European Committee of Regions, which is scheduled next week. So we asked to introduce us to his opinion on agroecology.
The present pandemic has exposed the weaknesses of our globalist agriculture and food system. Agroecology going hand in hand with the development of sustainable local food systems will respond to our food security and environmental challenges. The role of regions and cities is crucial to promote this historical change. Agroecology is not just an agronomic approach. It is also a social and territorial approach. Agroecology is linked with a fabric of small and middle farms, with free-range animal production, with much more trees, with local organic food, farmers' shops, local processing units. This will bring jobs to countryside and reconcile farmers and consumers. Against global warming and biodiversity loss, agroecology will develop an agriculture in and with nature, which cares for living soils and long-term fertility. It will bring fresh and healthy products from farm to fork and dynamize our rural areas. Of course, along the Green Deal, agroecology should be fully integrated in the CAP reform. What are we waiting for?
So that's all from us this week. And this week, like every week, the AgriFood podcast was produced by Euractiv's AgriFood news team, Natasha Foote and Gerardo Fortuna, with technical support from Evie Curie. Be sure to subscribe to the AgriFood newsletter so that you don't miss the latest AgriFood news in the EU.
The podcast is also available on all major streaming platforms, including Apple, Amazon, Stitcher, and Spotify. That's all from us this week. I'm Gerardo Fortuna. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.